Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It is hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday, kicking off right now. Appreciate everybody jumping on board for a couple hours of conversation about college football. But it's April. Yeah, it's April. We've already had spring games. We got more coming up in, we got some tomorrow night. But this weekend, next weekend, some of them have actually been pushed back a little further than they were. So we're usually wrapped up by the last Saturday in April. I assume that's going to be the case this year. But with some programs pushing back the very start of their spring practice, not just the date of the game, the spring game, but the start of practice, it really changes the schedules quite a bit. In fact, a lot of them, some of them will decide not to have any sort of game at all, just, again, another close scrimmage. Appreciate Matt Moscona coming on from 104.5 in Baton Rouge, amongst other places. We will be talking Vol football in about 10 minutes. Eric Kane's coming on from the Sports Animal up yonder in Knoxville. Bottom of the hour, good friend of ours, Zach Abelverde, Gator Sports beat writer for the Gainesville Sun, part of that USA Today network. Always appreciate him coming on. The man knows the Gators back and forth, so we will talk to him at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, LSU freshman running back out indefinitely. That would be Kevontre Bradford. Bradford's the kid that was ticketed to, where was it, Louisiana Tech. And then he got a fourth star. 5'11", 190 pounds, freshman. He can motor. And according to the report, the hamstring injury, quote, could take a while to recover from. It's spring. It's April 1st. Just not a joke, but it's April 1st. And so when you think you got 5 months, you're going to take at least, 4 weeks of it. So they need him in the fall. And remember that he was a freshman last year, played in a handful of games as well. But he'll be a freshman again. Speaking of freshmen last year, this is a big deal. Headline, former Memphis receiver transfers to Southern Cal. That would be former Memphis redshirt freshman Taj Washington. He was their second leading receiver last year. Again, that's a freshman. And he had his blow-up season, and he's looking around thinking, all right, who's coming back here? All right, well, I'm going to go pro. And by going pro, he's heading to the West Coast. He's going to play a season, I predict, a season out at Southern Cal. Huge, huge pickup there. 743 yards receiving last year for Washington. Now, again, he's transferring, so he will need either the one-time exemption, the waiver, to be passed, or he may not play for him at all, for all I know. But that is where Taj Washington's laying. Like I said, that kid just blew up as a freshman last year. That's a good gift for Clay Helton. Final headline. NCAA President Mark Emmert meets with men's basketball players about name, image, likeness. There were some other issues discussed as well, but there were three ball players from the Big Ten. A kid from Michigan, one from Iowa, player from Rutgers. They had requested a chance to speak with Mark Emmert directly. And the summary that I took, now this is from the kids themselves. What I took away is Mark Emmert shook their hands, nodded, leaned in, and he's not going to do anything. That's my interpretation of their summary. that, according to the three players, Mark Emmert is only going to do what Congress forces Mark Emmert and the NCAA to do. So it was and like I said, when there were other issues, it was like the equality for the facilities for the women's basketball tournament, et cetera. So you really got a lot of fires to stomp out if you're Mark Emmert right now. And the fact that you're saying, hey, we have to wait on Congress, and the fact that Congress is saying, oh, the last thing you want is for us to set the rules, Mark. I think at this point, now this is just my idea. I think the NCAA realizes, in fact, I'll say this is probably about a 90% likelihood. The NCAA realizes how this is all going to turn out. The fact that it may actually dissolve any sort of authority that the NCAA has been given from the schools. But those in leadership positions with the NCAA, I firmly believe they all understand how all of these proceedings are going on every single front, whether it's player mobility, name, image, likeness, etc. And at this point, their only goal is to stall it for as long as possible. If you can get another two football seasons out of it before you really have to loosen the chains, that's what they're talking about here. I think that's the strategy now, is just to slow play it. It will be an eventual surrender, but only when they're absolutely forced. So that's, again, that's my take. Three kids who met with Mark Emmert yesterday, they're like, yeah, it's our take too. Consider yourself up to date. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with more next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And while we have already talked about, I mean, the outcome of some entire spring practices and scrimmages and games and all that, Tennessee didn't even start till about a week ago. And about that same time, you may have heard some news. In fact, we mentioned it briefly on here that three players and suspended and something at the dorm, and there was a fourth player who might have been involved. But here are the three we know about. I didn't see the name Caden Salter at first, and then it might have been a couple of days after. Caden Salter, who is a pretty highly touted true freshman, early enrollee, and kid's like 17, I think. And so we leave that out. There are kids running around college campus. Like high school kids, and he's one of them, and he has been suspended as well. Want to welcome on now a guy we always love turning to when it's time to talk Vols from the Sports Animal up there in Rocky Top. It is Eric Kane. Eric, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well.
I wasn't left out of the loop, was I? Nobody saw the name Caden Salter, not at the very outset of that. Is that correct? And he was kind of, I found out a few days later, and he's suspended indefinitely. What else do we know?
Yeah, that is correct, and that's the reason that none of us knew that it was Caden Salter, because he's 17 years old. He didn't show up in the police report, and he's suspended indefinitely, and it's him and Tennessee's highest rated recruit, a linebacker from the Maryland area, and Aaron Willis, Isaac Washington, the defensive lineman, and a rising sophomore, Martavis French from Memphis. Those are the four players, and just really unfortunate. And you're right. I mean, kids are dumb sometimes. Kids make mistakes. That doesn't mean that anybody should not be given a second chance. But for right now, They are not with the football team. And since the incident happened in a dormitory, it happened on campus, the university is kind of going through an investigation and all that. So I don't think Tennessee, in terms of football, can do anything about these four players until the university kind of says, all right, so this is what we're going to do. And so that's kind of the situation right now. And, you know, it's unfortunate because Caden Salter, all these four of these kids, you know, I cover recruiting and I've talked to all of them and they seem like fine kids, just made a mistake, and not making excuses for them, but kind of just is what it is. And you just hope for their sake that they can learn from this and bounce back. But what we know right now, not a part of the football team. I would expect them to, you know, get a second chance and return to the team of some sorts, maybe, you know, later in the semester, maybe in the summer, but we're going to have to see.
And with a guy like anybody in this situation, but a guy like Caden Salter, again, even young for an early enrollee and a quarterback, the experience, what he would have done in spring, it was going to benefit him in a more immediate sense than the program. And so even though it doesn't, you know, I've heard people say, well, it won't affect the quarterback battle for 2021. No, it won't, I don't believe. But there is still lost opportunities. I mean, a quarterback, even if he's with the fourth team, there's value in every single rep.
Yeah, 100%. There's so much value in that. And though I do agree, I don't think it would affect the 2021 quarterback battle all that much. You know, Caden Salter, you know, it's going to help him tremendously. It's a brand new slate. It's a brand new coaching staff. Though this coaching staff didn't recruit Caden Salter, didn't sign Caden Salter, this is not the way you want to get off, you know, kind of off on the wrong foot with this coaching staff. But you're right. You know, Caden Salter could have benefited tremendously from sitting back, getting the reps that he would have gotten in spring, sitting back, watching, you know, Hendon Hooker and Harrison Bailey and Brian Maurer kind of go to work and just be a sponge. And it's hard to learn. It's hard to get better when you're not even out there. And, you know, Caden Salter's not out there right now. So it's unfortunate. And plus, too, you know, he might not have been the starter. He might not have made significant progress this spring or, you know, put himself in position to really battle in the fall, but he maybe could have pushed some of those other guys, because this quarterback battle, it is wide open right now between Hendon Hooker, Harrison Bailey, Brian Maurer, and Caden Salter could have pushed some of those guys. So it's unfortunate again, but you know, we'll have to see exactly what the future holds for him.
What did Tennessee get in Cade Mays? What was he last year?
So Cade Mays, he was, you know, I'm not going to say he was a letdown because he's a tremendous talent and he's, you know, going to be one of Tennessee's best players returning. But he was a guy that kind of looked like he was a little out of shape at times. I think he was banged up a little bit. Tennessee had him playing at right guard, right tackle, right guard, right tackle. And when he was at right tackle, I don't think he ever looked at, you know, he was really, you know, really at home there. I think it looked like he was a little out of place there playing at right tackle. But, you know, he didn't play the first game because Greg Sankey, you know, wasn't allowing, you know, he and three others to play because of the interconference transfers and all that. But, you know, Cade Mays, you know, returning, Tennessee's going to have to count on him. Yeah, it's a new system. Cade Mays doesn't really fit this system in terms of, you know, what an offensive lineman typically is. He's going to have to drop a little bit of weight, but he's a Knoxville boy. His brother's on the team. Tennessee's going to be counting on Cooper Mays as well, probably going to play center. I think he has, you know, gotten himself in a little bit better shape, and Tennessee's going to have to count on him. He's going to be one of their main guys on the offensive line. And so I think underwhelming is how I would kind of sum up Cade Mays returning to Knoxville his first season. But certainly you're hoping that he can step it up and play like the NFL prospect that he will be when he leaves Tennessee.
If you had to guess, I don't know necessarily who, you know, leading rusher or whatever else, who's going to get the most carries? Who would be, if we look up, you know, the championship Saturday in December and we're looking at Tennessee season stats, who do you think's been the plow horse, or has it been spread around?
Yeah, I think it's going to be spread around. There's a couple of guys that are going to carry the ball. I think the conversation will start with Jabari Small. He was a true freshman last year, got a little bit of run, not a whole lot, but kind of got his toes dipped in the water a little bit. And when he was in the game, he's a small guy, but he runs hard, runs really, really hard. And that's what fans really, you know, liked about him. So he's coming back as the most experienced back on the team, if you want to call it that. And it's not even a whole lot of experience. Tyon Evans, the top-rated junior college running back that signed with Tennessee in the class of 2021, he's coming in. I think Tennessee is going to get some things out of him. And then after that, it's kind of, could it be D. Beckwith, the 6'5", 230-pound high school quarterback, high school wide receiver.
Who's that, a tight end or receiver or a running back now.
Yeah, exactly. And so right now he's a running back. Will he stay a running back? I don't think so, but we'll see. You know, maybe they just want to change the pace back there. But going to be a local guy in T. Hodge that's about 6'1", 230, here from Maryland, Tennessee, or Maryville, Tennessee. We'll have to see who it is. I think it's going to be a number of guys that kind of split that load, but the leaders in the clubhouse, I think, will be Jabari Small, as well as Tyon Evans.
There are times, and I'm sure, Eric, you get this as well. Everybody does. You watch games, and you see a kid that, like, I know he's better than his production equals. And Velus Jones is one of those kids. I'm like, he can be a difference maker. He can flip fields in the SEC, even at this highest level. What's possible for him?
Yeah, Velus, he's fast. You know, he was an all-conference kick returner, punt returner back in the, you know, when he played at USC in the Pac-12. And he comes over to Tennessee, and it took him a little bit. They tried to use him. They tried to, you know, get the ball into his hands and jet sweeps and little things across the middle. And then finally, at the end of the year, they just said, all right, run straight. We're going to get you the ball. And, you know, that's kind of when he and Jalen Hyatt, a true freshman last year, kind of took off the last couple of games of the season. And I think Velus, he called this offense for Josh Heupel the other day when we met with him, a receiver's dream. And I think he, you know, certainly could benefit in this offense. He's the leader in that room right now. Other players are saying he's the leader. The assistant coaches are saying he stepped up being the leader. And I think his skill set will really benefit in this offense. So he decided to come back because he wants to, you know, make football a career. And he understands he needs a little bit more on tape in order to put him in position to do just that. So I think Velus Jones Jr. is going to be wide receiver number one, or wide receiver, you know, 1A, and Jalen Hyatt 1B. And I'm expecting him to have a pretty decent season for Tennessee because, you know, the Vols might not be great, but they're going to throw the football around. And I think Velus Jones Jr. is going to be on the receiving end of many of those passes.
When you look at some of the talent that has left the Tennessee program, I mean, it's big names and it's like legit talented SEC players, Henry To'o among them. And so there's a lot of talk about what's not there at linebacker in particular. I'm kind of a Jeremy Banks fan. I think he's a good, tough player. He's not probably an all-SEC player. In fact, he's not. And it's a pretty thin position there, in my opinion. Is he the best of the bunch?
Yeah, it's real thin, and he, without a doubt, is the best of the bunch right now. He's the only one that has any experience coming back right now. And, you know, when we got out there for practice on Tuesday for the first time, Jeremy Banks wasn't out there. Turns out he's had some off-season surgery, and he's kind of limited this spring. We'll have to see exactly if he's going to get out there at all or if he's completely out this spring. We'll talk with Josh Heupel at some point tomorrow. But Jeremy Banks is a guy that's just really raw. His first season, he played running back, linebacker, never really found a home. His second season, he started out playing linebacker and then was dismissed from the team for a little bit. And then last year, he played linebacker. He just kind of looked like a true freshman, just really raw. But he's very nasty in terms of he's a gritty player. He's tough. He's quick. You know, he's a sure tackler when he kind of gets there. It's just kind of learning to play the position. But, you know, Jeremy Banks is going to be in the mix at linebacker. And then, you know, maybe a freshman in Morvin Joseph, who kind of played on the edge last year. Outside of that, there's not a whole lot of depth there. I think Tennessee's going to have to maybe move some guys around. There's a running back by the name of Lenneth Whitehead that has great size at about 6'2", 235, that I think would be a good candidate to move from running back to linebacker. Maybe Tennessee looks in the transfer portal. Maybe Tennessee moves the defensive end back at linebacker. They're going to have to do something because there's hardly any depth there right now. But Jeremy Banks, certainly the leader in the clubhouse.
And that's before you started playing games. So it's, you're right. I mean, by the time you get to October, November, I mean, you need more than three linebackers to get through a season. Eric, always appreciate it, brother. It's good stuff, man. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, again, Eric King from Sports Animal. Now, on the upside, the potential to kind of wade into the 2021 pool, you start with Bowling Green, Pitt, and Tennessee Tech. So at least you got an opportunity to maybe not have guys playing at 100% without having to lose a game.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right, which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Florida continues to prepare for its spring game, which I believe is in 2 weeks and 2 days. I think that's accurate. And they've got some absolute, just it's that phrase I use, game wreckers. Kyle Pitts was a game wrecker. Kadarius Toney could be a game wrecker. And I'll give that kid credit. You know, if you're not old enough to have ever watched Sugar Ray Leonard, the old boxer, and he is old now. He's probably, he won a gold medal in 76 games in Montreal. So Sugar Ray Leonard's probably, I'm going to guess, you know, 65. That's a guess. Dan, check that. Sugar Ray Leonard, now, I'm not going to take any, like I said, he's a gold medal winner, world champion in multiple classifications. He would flurry at the end of rounds. Sugar Ray Leonard is probably the most misunderstood and over-appreciated fighter in history. He would bust tail the final 20 seconds and get a 10-10 round or eke out a 10-9. That's how he won things. He'd fight for 20 or 30 seconds. I'll give Kadarius Toney credit. Because his first few seasons in Gainesville, I was like, I need him to play full-time, and I need him to run more than just the, quote, other plays. Wasn't that Kadarius, like his first couple seasons? Well, we're going to run the other plays with Kadarius. You know what he did in 2020? How old is he, Dan?
64.
64. Not Kadarius, Sugar Ray. Kadarius Toney, he ran the regular offense, and he blistered people as soon as he got the ball. He's a game wrecker. Kyle Pitts a game wrecker, and they got a lot of talent to replace. Want to head out now. Guy that we always love talking to when it's time to talk Florida, it is Zach Albaverde. Zach, welcome back, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Pro day is over, and, you know, Florida basketball is over, and then now it's the off season for me, so I'm not I got no complaint.
Let's talk a bit about game wreckers and specifically Kadarius Toney. Am I being fair there? Like, going into last year, I was like, I need to see him play full time and I need to see him just operate in the, quote, regular offense. Is that fair to describe his first couple of seasons there and then also how he exploded in 2020?
No, it's absolutely, you know, fair take on him. And, you know, there were a lot of people, I think, going into last season, when people talked about breakout candidates for the 2020 Florida football team, not a lot of people were pegging that person to be Kadarius Toney, just because he simply had not taken the jump and shown the production and development at receiver that I think gave people the confidence that he could have the type of year that he did last season. But, you know, going back in hindsight now, and now, you know, we've seen what he is fully capable of, I think that he could have reached the point that, you know, he kind of was in 2020 and 2019. But that injury that he had, I want to say was the second game of the season, just totally set him back. And I think, one, in terms of his development, but two, just being able to be showcased in this offense. Because when he did get on the field in 2019, I mean, he made some pretty spectacular plays. Yep. That, you know, touchdown that he took to the house against Miami. Then he came back at the end of the year and had a ridiculous game against Florida State in the regular season finale. But even so, people were not going into 2020 thinking, okay, this guy, even if he is healthy, is going to be able to put it together. And I think it was a credit to him, especially with, you know, no off season, he was really able to take that next step. I mean, he was, I think in the last few weeks, people were starting to talk about him as a first-round pick. which is crazy to even think that he's in that conversation. But then he goes out yesterday and runs a 4.39, which I don't think anybody realized he had that kind of speed, and I think all but solidified himself now as a first-rounder with Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, wasn't he always viewed as, and I'm not trying to be cute here, play word games, because there's a real difference. Wasn't he always viewed as more quick than fast?
Yes, he was. I think most people would describe him as is an adjective, you know, elusive. You know, he's got great acceleration. I mean, that was I think what people would describe his speed as, and maybe think that he would, you know, maybe run a sub 4.6, but not, I don't think anybody thought he'd be in the 4.4 range. And then he showed people, I'm even a step below that. I can get into the 4.39 range. And he did say that he put in some work to get to that point. I don't think he always ran that fast, even this past season at Florida. But his development, I think, and, you know, and Chris Doran asked this question to Dan Mullen at Pro Day, and I think that it was great. Just about, obviously, the top guys that Florida had at Pro Day were the three offensive stars, Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts, and Kadarius Toney. And when you think about where those guys were when Dan Mullen arrived in Gainesville, I mean, nobody had them, you know, even on the trajectory of, you know, developing into the players that they became. Even Kyle Pitts, despite him being, you know, four-star recruit, and I think Georgia was after him, nobody saw him becoming this all-world generational tight end. So I think a lot of it is, man, Dan Mullen and his system and this staff, they really took those three guys specifically and just took their game to another level.
You mentioned Kyle Pitts there, and yesterday I said, I want to be Kyle Pitts, and then I saw him with his shirt off, and I'm like, no, that looks like a lot of hard work. I want to be Kyle Pitts' agent is what I want to be, because there are rules, you know, and I talked about this yesterday. I don't take a tight end in the top 10. I ain't that jazzed about taking a tight end in the first round. I would consider Kyle Pitts if I was at 5 or 4 or maybe 3. That's not an exaggeration at all.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that because, I mean, it's in the common draft era, Chuck. There's only been one tight end that's gone in the top 5, and that was in 1972. So the fact that he's even in at this point is incredible. I don't know how often we'll ever see this again. But I do also think that, you know, he wasn't in that range, I think, before yesterday. I mean, everybody loved him, and he was, you know, talked about as a top 10 guy. But to go out and run a 4.44 and then have the longest wingspan by any receiver or tight end in the NFL in the last 20 years, I mean, that's, I think, was the eye-opener as to why people, you know, saw his catch radius and all the ridiculous receptions that he made last year. He is a special talent. When you put those measurables along with his film, it's going to be hard for teams to pass on him. You know, obviously, you know, I think the first probably 3 picks are set. But after that, I think he could come off the board at any time.
Wrapping up, Zach Alberti again from USA Today Network, covers Gators for the Gainesville Sun, among other jobs. Zach, let's talk a little bit, about the Marco Wilson and the way his season ended. I'd seen some references yesterday that he was wanting an opportunity to prove to NFL teams that I'm not just a kid who threw a cleat. And I've known that because I've watched him play the past 3 years. It's a really good defensive back. Did he help himself yesterday?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I will say, though, I think even though folks that have followed his career and certainly are familiar with the SEC, you know, they know what he can do. And they've seen, you know, this guy started 36 games at UF. So you're familiar with him. And for the, you know, boneheaded mistake that he made and some of the plays that he gave up last season, he's also made a lot of plays as well. And but I do think that was just such the lasting memory that everybody had in their minds of him was that shoe toss. And so I think for him to go out there and run the ridiculous time that he did and then just basically break the vert, jumped over the bar, and I think posted the fifth best measurement among cornerbacks since 1999. And this is a guy that's torn his ACL twice. So I think he's just totally shifted the conversation from, you know, the shoe toss and every I think his shortcomings last year, and now people are talking about his potential and what he can do, especially if he gets in the right situation. I'm happy for the guy because he obviously comes from a great family and he's always been kind of a stand-up guy. And then for him to just go out here and do this, it definitely was redemption for him.
What do you think they have back in Elam and Marshall?
Yeah, I mean, Marshall's brand new. So,
yeah.
I think when I saw Jahari Rogers, who was a consensus, I think, top 100 recruit out of Texas that signed with Florida in 2020, played in a few games last year, when you see him entering the transfer portal this week after spring ball has ended, to me, I look at that and I say that's the Jason Marshall effect. I think he saw that kid come in as a five-star for Miami, got first-team reps right away in practice, and probably recognized that I'm going to have a hard time cracking this rotation because you also got, Kyir Elam and Jaden Hill. So, you know, they're in a good place in terms of, I think, their first five defensive backs. But that is the one concern still coming out of spring ball. Dan Mullen ran through all of his positions after the final scrimmage, and, you know, he talked about where the strengths were. He talked about where the weaknesses were, which sometimes he doesn't give that much detail. So I think we appreciated that in the media. But the last position that he named and talked about was the defensive backs. And, you know, they'll have 15 on the roster for 2021, Chuck. 12 of them are underclassmen. So you got the numbers, but that is not what you want from an experience standpoint. So they're going to really need the Elams and certainly the Trey Deans to kind of fill that void. And then they're going to need Jason Marshall to play right away. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and to cross train at different positions and hop inside if there's an injury. And I mean, you're talking about so much youth there. And the reason I want to bring all this up is because, I mean, the reality is, before the portal, if we can go all the way back to like 2017, to really be stocked, especially in a conference like the SEC, I mean, let's be honest, you needed like 8 defensive backs. Is that realistic anymore, given that a kid is going to, like what we just talked about with Marshall, that a kid's going to say, oh, no, I'll have to sit the bench at least for a little while. I don't know that the type of depth we're used to at a place like UF, I don't know if that's real anymore.
Yeah, it's a great point because that is, especially at cornerback too. Maybe at safety you can keep your numbers what you usually like it to be, but at corner, you know, as you know, the farther away you play from the ball, the easier it is to play as a freshman, and that is just the spot. And Florida recruits that position so well that a lot of times they have true freshmen that can come in and play right away, and that's going to shake up your depth at that position every time that happens. You look at it, and I wrote it in the Rogers story. They have 6 scholarship cornerbacks right now. 6. Now, they can potentially move a Corey Collier one of their other defensive backs, Kamar Wilcoxon. Both of those guys were repping at safety this spring. They could move them to corner if they needed to. But you're talking about 6 scholarship guys at corner. I mean, that is not the depth that Florida is used to having at that position. But I think it's a sign of the times. And, you know, if guys aren't happy with their playing time, they're going to bolt. And it's especially going to happen at a position like corner at a school like Florida.
Last thing for you, and I'm going to ask you for your impression of another person's mindset. So this is not entirely fair, but this is just your impression. Where do you believe Dan Mullen is with Todd Grantham? Where do you think the head coach is when he looks over at his defensive coordinator? Because I know what the words are coming out of Mullen's mouth, but I also know what I saw last year.
I think, honestly, if you really sat down and just wanted him to give it to you straight, first of all, I think Todd's his guy. That's established.
I agree with that.
I think that almost his guy to the point that, like, if Mullen ever got an NFL job one day and he was going to take his staff with him, Todd Grantham would go. I mean, that's just like I think he's almost worked himself to the level of a Billy Gonzalez, John Hevesy, although they're not that, they don't go that far back, but I think they're that tight. And in terms of his coaching ability and prowess, I honestly, and he has said this, but I honestly believe that he feels this way, that they sucked last year on defense because of COVID. I really think that they chalk it up to, we didn't have a spring, we didn't have a chance to develop the guys that we needed to be where we needed to be on defense. And that he feels like now coming back with the full offseason. He's recruited a little bit more to his scheme, and some of these top recruits that they have signed are now going to have to step into the forefront. He thinks it's going to turn around. Now, if they have another bad season, it's going to be hard for him to, I think, stand as much in the paint as he does with Grantham. But I truly believe that he feels like that last season was an anomaly just because of all the, you know, outside conditions and stuff.
That absolutely is one of the scenarios that I have heard folks discuss with the UF defense. And so you're not the first one to kind of bring up that point of view from inside the coach's room. Brother, I appreciate it all the time. Spot on stuff, Zach. Thank you, man.
Absolutely, Chuck. Thanks for having me again, man.
All right, Zach Appleverdy again from Gainesville Sun.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It would be good for us to scrimmage Arkansas. You got Nebraska, you got A&M. There's teams around that would be good to have a spring game, spring scrimmage, where you would do like the NFL, do some inside, do some 7-on, do some team. I would be for that, just from a number standpoint.
Mike Gundy, I almost don't have to tell you who he is. I almost don't. He's mulled enough that I almost don't have to tell you, but that was the Oklahoma State head coach. Does everybody know what he said when he said team? He said 7-on-7. We all know what that is. Team, like offensive team versus defensive team, for instance. And he's saying about scrimmages in August, for instance. The NFL, they have their preseason games, but then someone normally with some geographic proximity, you would have like the Saints and the Texans would scrimmage, or the Texans and the Cowboys, for instance. You would have the Jags and the Falcons, maybe. So if you've got some of that, you come down and you'd have some structured scrimmages. And the coaches would agree on the outset, all right, we're going to work on our goal line offense for 20 minutes. All right, well, we'll work on our goal line defense. And so everybody gets to check all the boxes. You just agree on the order. And so that is what Mike Gundy was talking about there, and having something to do either in spring or, like Dabo has suggested, bring it to August and have some sort of preseason action against somebody who is not you. Dan Matthews will be popping in just a couple of minutes, but right now I'm going to wrap it up the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
May look like a little bit of a flashback in the SEC for one fan base this coming year, and it's the LSU fan base with Alabama's offense. When you lose a first-round draft pick at quarterback, which it looks like the Alabama Crimson Tide is about to, when you lose first-round receivers, which they're about to, it can change the entire focus of the offense. It can you can have the tendency to sort of circle the wagons, bring things in, etc. And I'm wondering if after a second year of that exact scenario unfolding in Tuscaloosa, if there is enough of a vacuum, and I mean a tiny, tiny, like a teacup amount size of vacuum there, that Nick Saban, despite everything he said to the contrary, if there is a little bit of a flashback experience with the Alabama offense for the LSU fan base. If you go back to when LSU won the national championship with Nick Saban there in 2003, you had Ali Broussard averaging like 5 yards a carry. He's running third team. You had Chiron Carey, who played in the NFL. Here's your fourth team back. Joseph Addai eventually became a first-round pick. He didn't start. Justin Vincent, he carried the groceries. He was the lead dog. And you won a national championship with 1, 2, 3, 4, I'll say, starting running backs. And that was sort of the approach. Wasn't even sort of the approach. With Mock and who else? Marcus Randall. It was the approach while Nick Saban was in Baton Rouge. And it was the approach, honestly, in a lot of places while Nick Saban was in Baton Rouge. He has said a whole lot about that's just not what it is anymore. That's not how you win. I am going to be very eager to see Alabama when they come out against Miami and then get into the SEC slate. I think it could mirror that LSU makeup from almost 20 years ago with Brian Robinson, Jace McClellan, Keelan Robinson, Roydell Williams, that there could be a four-pronged attack around a mostly power-based rushing attack in Tuscaloosa. Nick Saban, he swims upstream. He makes the adjustment before everybody else does. We talked about it with recruiting. He started bringing in transfers as a vital, immediately important cog in the offense. Everybody else caught up. This year, what did he do? Didn't bring in a single transfer. He will again. It was a one-year deal, but it was an interesting pivot from Nick Saban. I think he may do the same thing offensively, especially early in the season when you have a first-time starter at quarterback and four stud tailbacks. I think we may see a little bit of a flashback from Alabama. That is my closing argument, brought to you by the law offices of Alexander Shinar and Associates. Wherever you're at in the Deep South, whether it's Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, wherever, if you need legal expertise, you need Alexander Shinar and Associates. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, at least for that Saban/Miles era there, that 2007 team might be the only other one, and coincidentally won the national championship.
Is that Chuck Scott in that bunch?
Yeah, I mean, that's Chuck Scott. That's Keelan Williams.
And
also, too, Stephon Ridley, Stephen Ridley, too.
Was Keelan number five?
He was number five. You're right.
He should have been the best of the bunch in my
And opinion. If I'm not mistaken, didn't they kind of – because remember, at that time, LSU would do – like kind of like a pistol formation, and it
they were the first team to run a lot of pistol that we saw in America. And they actually, remember, they were one of the first to actually offset the single back in shotgun next to the quarterback as well. It was sort of advanced stuff.
Yeah, that along with the always popular toss dive was the one that LSU fans definitely loved seeing on Saturday afternoons,
or in this case,
or Saturday nights. I want to actually play off of what Mike Gundy has said, because I've said the same thing, Chuck, that it's really kind of interesting, and I'm sure now, just because we're so original in this business, that we're going to be asking coaches this same question here coming up at the end of spring of, hey, you know, you're doing it this way. Would you like to do it that way? And I think that most coaches would say absolutely yeah, because if I get an idea of what my guys look like against other guys, then I got a better evaluation of what I have going into the fall season. And it gets back to what I heard a few years ago of Mike Nolan talking about, you know, practicing against other teams. He goes, hey, you know the weight of your guys. You know what you have to expect when you're going against them on a daily basis. It's almost like getting into a fight. Once you get hit, or once you get into it, you're kind of like, oh, here we go. This is how this is going to go.
Yeah, your choice has been made at that point. You're exactly right about that. Dan, good stuff today. David, appreciate you keeping us on the air. Fantastic job by everybody behind the glass. Thank you all for getting in. 22 hours, folks. Be back right here tomorrow talking more college football on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.